This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's been really good, but I think he knows that I have like that soldier mentality. I think the work rate that I'm delivering to the team is a lot. I think the manager in his mind thinks that I'm like his surgeon on the pitch. And that's strange for a striker because normally it's normally always the midfielders. But he knows that he can count on me whenever, like, and he knows that I will always put the team first ahead of myself. And that's something that I told him. I said, for me, the team is the most important thing. My desire to win is bigger than ever now since I came to this club because I always wanted to win. I always wanted to chase trophies. And I always put that in front of my personal objectives. And he knows that. And I think that's the reason why I'm playing all the time.
Thank Friday, it's football on BFM 89.9.
Romelu Lukaku, Manchester United striker. I think he meant sergeant. It sounded like surgeon. Yes, hi, I'm Ross. This is the Friday show. In the studio with me, we've got, from Football Tribe, Keishnan.
Hello, hello.
Hello, Keish. We've got Nicholas Arnil here as well from ESPN FC.
Hello, Ross.
Hello, Nick. And we've got Bob Holmes, as usual.
Hi, everybody.
Hello, Bob. Tweet the guys at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Follow us on Facebook. Like the page. It's Football on BFM. We heard Lukaku at the start. He scored. Man United came from two down to beat Crystal Palace. What's more important was that win got them back into second place above Liverpool. Big result.
It's huge. And you know what? You could almost see the amount of impact the win had on the players as well. Players like Rashford came out after the game and tweeted, "I've never been involved in a comeback like that before."
Yeah,
it's true. Because the last time United came back,
they watch it on telly.
Exactly. The last time United came back from being two goal down was in 2013, and that's a hell of a lot of time between then to now. And it was long due. And going back to Romelu Lukaku, I thought he had a brilliant game, and I don't think it was a case of him improving on the things that we've criticised all throughout the summer.
His touch still leaves a bit to be desired.
You know, exactly. Yeah. But he is compensating for it by showing desire on the pitch, by making those extra runs into the channel, by holding up the play a lot better, and by just, in a game where the likes of Paul Pogba didn't show up, Lukaku was the driving force. Every single time he got the ball, he drove the team forward, and that was refreshing.
Mm. But still, when Palace raced into a 2-0 lead, Bob, United stank.
Absolutely. This was actually my big shout, if anyone can remember, a week ago. But I didn't make it with a great deal of conviction, I must admit. But when I switched on, Palace were 2-1 up, and I thought, hang on. And then the inevitable happened, of course. I did watch the game again, I hasten to add. But they were rubbish, and Mourinho tore into them at half-time, apparently. Yep. And even his comments afterwards, he said they were lucky. And I think it betrays a lack of belief in this side. He doesn't have faith in his own team. Mm. That's absolutely clear. And bear in mind, Palace had 14 players injured.
That right back looked a bit useful, didn't he?
Yeah, he was pretty good. No, I thought Andros Townsend looked pretty lively too.
Townsend completely tormented the United backline throughout the first half. Mm.
But this would be 2 points definitely dropped for Palace. I mean, they really had a stranglehold on this game in the first half. You know, 2-0 up. You know, all the signs were there for them to go on and defend that lead. And I think the signs were when they conceded that Lukaku goal. You know, that goal. For me, Palace should have prevented it. They had 5 defenders right in front of him, and somehow he managed to get a shot in, got the equaliser, and that set the tone for United to go on and get the winner. It's really, really hard on Roy Hodgson and Palace, who had played well really throughout. And even going back to the Spurs game, you know, they played so well, and then so unfortunate to concede that last-minute goal to Harry Kane.
Bitter pill for Palace to swallow, and it doesn't get any easier. We'll talk about their weekend fixtures later on the show. In midweek Champions League, then, Liverpool drew 0-0 with Porto at Anfield, but of course the job was done in the first leg. It was a 5-0 away win. It was a much-changed Liverpool side. Henderson, Lallana, was given his first start for like something like 2 months and all that. But so what are your thoughts on it?
Well, job done, but nothing very inspiring. I think it was one to miss, wasn't it? The only surprise, I think, was that he didn't rest more players.
Exactly.
Mo Salah even came on. A bit of a cameo, but, you know, there was a risk there. Klopp would have taken the blame had Salah got injured in those last few minutes.
Yeah, true. Lallana's a weird one. He's 29 now. Through no fault of his own, he's missed a lot of football, injury and all that. But Liverpool have quite clearly learned to move on without him.
Yeah, but it's difficult because they've over the last 2 months or so, Liverpool have started to really gel, especially in midfield. Even Henderson is struggling to get game time, let alone Lallana, who's just coming back into the team. Your Emre Chans and your Alex Oxlade-Chamberlains in particular have really asserted themselves in the middle of the park. But the thing about Lallana is he's different. He gives Liverpool something different, a different dimension in midfield. He's got the flair, he's got the tenacity, and he's really, really comfortable dealing with the ball at his feet. So I think he's still going to be a really, really useful outlet for Liverpool over the next for the rest of the season. And he might not start every game, but he still gives them a different dimension every single time he comes on.
Yeah. All right. Still great result. Liverpool through to the quarterfinals, and let's talk on that same night. PSG 1, Real Madrid 2. Cristiano Ronaldo, top scorer in the Champions League. He's got phenomenal stats. I've got one here. Ronaldo and Real Madrid. Since 2001, Real Madrid have played 41 knockout Champions League games. And Cristiano Ronaldo has scored in that time 44 goals. It's phenomenal. But Real and the Champions League, they're synonymous as far as the tournament goes.
Absolutely. And I think so are PSG. With their epic failures to get beyond the semi-finals. And the semi-finals were reached before the Qatari takeover. That was a different regime then. So the current regime can't claim any benefit for that whatsoever. And they must be tearing their hair out as to what to do. I mean, they spent nearly $400 million on two players. What more can you do? Well, you can do a lot, actually. You can build a proper club instead of trying to cherry-pick stars. I mean, they're trying to do everything now, aren't they?
And for starters, they could show a bit more desire on the pitch. Because when Real Madrid got a goal up, and even when they went to when they scored the second goal, there was never a point in which PSG showed the desire to come back. You know, it's a Champions League night, and a player in your team gets sent off. If this were United of the past, I should say, or even Liverpool or even your Barcelona's or Real Madrid, when they get a player sent off in a game of that magnitude, there's always going to be that desire to come back. They might leave themselves open at the back and concede a few more goals, but point is, there'll be desire, evident, clear desire on the pitch.
Yeah.
We didn't get that from PSG.
Verratti's 66-minute red card did not help, but Zidane kind of won it tactically as well, because he dropped Toni Kroos. He dropped Luka Modric, he dropped Gareth Bale, he went with Vasquez, he went with Asensio, and you know, he went for the counter-attack game, and it paid off.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he basically knew what sort of formation and what sort of approach to take in this game. After all, Real are so experienced in this stage of the Champions League, you know.
Does he have to win it to save his job?
I think he has, and he's got everything in his power to win it. You know, he's got young players performing for them. You know, they turn up on big nights like this. You know, even though with all the stars missing, you know, Isco was one big absentee after playing so well in the early stages of the Champions League. It was quite a surprise to see him not playing. But Asensio and Vasquez, you know, they combined so perfectly.
Asensio looked superb. He looks like he could fit in that David Silva role, like that, you know, the successor.
But just going back to Unai Emery's future, I think he's pretty much done for at the end of the season, because PSG have not delivered at all in the Champions League in the last six seasons.
Oddly, Zizou's name's been mentioned. So, all right, let's move on from Real Madrid to Man City, who lost at home against Basel. Is it their first home defeat since 2016? And the job was done in the first leg. It was a 5-2 aggregate win. But, you know, City can be beaten if you let them thrash you in the first leg and make them let them make loads of changes.
Well, Pep wasn't very happy, was he? I mean, doesn't like losing, of course, and they shouldn't have lost. I mean, it still looked a decent team on paper, didn't it? But I think what it shows is that City haven't got that tremendous depth. I mean, just because they've spent a lot of money and they're doing so well, we tend to think they've got depth. They have in certain positions. I mean, they can leave David Silva out and bring Bernardo Silva in and that sort of thing. But in key positions and with the injuries they've had, and I think this night showed that some of those players are not quite up to it.
It also showed that Toure is really reaching his sell-by date.
Yeah, right. But I mean, beyond that, I think this result is also largely due to just the 5-0 lead that they had from the first leg.
Well, Phil Foden played central midfield.
Exactly.
He's 17.
You look at your Bernardo Silvas, you look at your Leroy Sanés. These were players that just a few days ago did really, really well over the weekend playing in a Premier League game. But the kind of intensity that they played with in this particular game was just generally low. And as much as I think that it could be down to squad depth and everything, I just think it's just a case of them mentally thinking that they're through to the next stage and this is just one of those games that they have to go through just to get there.
All right, well, City are through. Spurs aren't, though. Spurs 1, Juventus 2 at Wembley. This wasn't Spurs being bad. This was Juve showing canny Italian experience, and they won by two typical well-taken goals.
It was the Italian job in every sense, was it? They came, they had planned, they came, they executed, they pretty much stole the win. And
Giorgio Cellini, 33. Wow. Right? Wow.
Yeah, tremendous exhibition of defending. The blocking. I don't think anybody makes more blocks.
I don't
than
think
Cellini,
anybody celebrates
do they?
Making those blocks either.
No.
Yeah.
No, he's fantastic. Of course, he won't be at the World Cup, will he?
No.
Yeah, great miss. This game, well, the narrative seems to be that this is Spurs being Spursy and Juventus being Juve, you know. But I think that's a bit unkind on Spurs, actually.
Yeah, they were good in the first half.
They dominated the first leg.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't wake up for 10 minutes when they found themselves 2-0 down in Turin. But they still proceeded to dominate that game. They got a bit of luck with the penalty miss, but coming away with 2-2, they showed a lot of bottle there. Everyone talks about them lacking bottle here. Cellini even said that. But I don't think it's really a question of bottle. These things happen. And Spurs, don't forget, last season, Spurs lost to Ghent at home at Wembley and were basically a disgrace. They didn't make it through the group phase. So to do what they've done this season, beating Borussia Dortmund, beating Real Madrid, thrashing Real Madrid, and really taking Juve right to the wire.
Yeah,
they've shown a massive improvement on last season, and just with a little bit of luck. And actually, Harry Kane, I think he's a bit culpable here.
Yeah,
the great Harry Kane. Yep. Sorry to say it, but
it's already a two-game drought. But who's counting?
He missed one early on. He took it round Buffon and couldn't quite make the angle. And then the header, the one that hit the post and then it looked as if it was going over the line. It wasn't. But actually, he should have scored with that, you know.
Yeah.
But he was offside. But the referee, along with a few other decisions he got wrong, he didn't give it.
Mm. So Spurs 1, Juve 2, Juve win 4-3 on aggregate. There's another week of Champions League football next week, and then the draw for the quarterfinals will be made. We're going for our first break. Back after this.
Hi, I'm Vicky Tradell, the British High Commissioner, and thank Friday it's football.
Thank Friday it's football on BFM 89.9.
Thanks for sticking with us, Bob, Nicholas and Keish in the studio. Arsenal played in the Europa League early this morning. They beat AC Milan 2-0 away, putting all their recent problems aside. Pretty solid performance. And is it all back? Normal services resumed now?
No, I think there's two things. Number one, is that I don't think Milan were really up to the game last night as well. There were multiple situations where some of the passes that were made were really, really atrocious. I'm looking at this Milan team and I'm saying that if this Milan team went 13 games unbeaten in the Serie A, what kind of quality of football are we talking about in the Serie A? But beyond that, even if we assume that it was Arsenal who forced Milan to play the way they did, if Arsenal could do it in Milan the way they did last night, then why weren't they doing it in the weeks before this?
Yeah.
So this doesn't really, it's not really back to routine business for Arsenal. It just, their performance last night and the victory last night just raises even more questions about their drop of form over the last few weeks. How did that happen?
Well, Mkhitaryan scored his first goal for the club and it was all quite good. All right, looking forward to their weekend tie then. They're at home against Watford. They're in sixth. They're facing, what, two straight home defeats now. They're going off the back off. Watford are resurgent, aren't they?
Yeah, two wins in two games, you know, clean sheets as well. You know, you've got Troy Deeney performing, scoring both winners in both those games. And I think Watford are a very vibrant side, you know. They like to play football. They like to play short, expansive football, and that's going to cause Arsenal a lot of problems. I think Arsenal, as Kish mentioned, you know, they had it easy against a very substandard Milan team, but for me, Watford will pose a much bigger threat to them, you know, especially with Gerard Deulofeu. You know, you've got Deeney and a few other players all looking to cause them problems.
Even Arsene Wenger has come out and conceded that maybe the league is top four is a bit of a stretch now, Bob.
Well, this is after winning last night. Yeah, well, he would, wouldn't he? But I agree with Nick here. I mean, but really, what he said then, just, I mean, if you... You would never have said that a few years ago.
No.
Watford presenting a greater problem than AC Milan. I mean,
exactly.
Really,
yeah.
You have to say that a few times for
Side
it to
of the
sink
time.
In. Absolutely. And in Doucouré, I think they have a top player who's much sought after.
This week mentioned with a lot of clubs.
Yeah. So I think Arsenal being one of them.
Yeah,
so
by Troy Deeney standard, he seems to have the cojones to play this weekend as well.
All right, that's going to be interesting. It could well be one of their big shouts, you know. Arsenal against Watford, then it's a Sunday 9:30 p.m. kickoff. Spurs are in action. They're the Super Sunday game, Spurs. They're away at Bournemouth. Now that Spurs are out of the Champions League, would you say that second is the bare minimum for them to be considered a successful season?
Well, bare minimum for what?
For a successful season.
For a successful season. Yeah. Well, success with a small s. I mean, they've still got the FA Cup. I mean, so there is the possibility of Pochettino breaking his trophy duck there. In fact, they've got a very good chance, I think, with neither City nor Arsenal nor Liverpool. Three big guns there out of the cup. So, good chance. But like I said before, the improvement in their performance in the Champions League makes it a success. And I don't think there's much difference between second and third and fourth now, because even fourth place, they don't have to qualify anymore for the Champions League.
No.
So I think if you come fourth, it's basically job done.
An Arsenal fan pointed out to me that there's a funny scenario. Should Arsenal win the Europa League, okay, then they need Chelsea to win the Champions League, Spurs to finish fourth, Spurs will miss out next season.
You mean City to win the Champions League?
No. Chelsea to win the Champions League, finish out of the top four.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah.
So Chelsea will get
in. Yes.
Spurs finish fourth.
Yeah, that situation could happen. I mean, highly unlikely. I can't see...
It was an Arsenal fan pointing it out.
I can't see Antonio Conte's bus helping them win against Barcelona, the new Kem, let alone go to the final and take it as well.
For Spurs against Bournemouth, Bournemouth are on a bit of a rotten run at the moment. Three games without a win. They're in 12. They're not totally safe yet.
Yeah, I mean, just judging by their last two games, I think they could have taken a little bit more. You know, both ended in draws. They did manage a mighty comeback against Newcastle, but to concede so late in the game against Leicester, that was a hammer blow for them. But having said that, you know, they have a lot of players who can still do the business. You know, Lewis Cook has been linked with a couple of clubs. Joshua King and Callum Wilson are also capable of causing problems as well. But I think it will be a step too much for them to take anything out of Spurs. You know, Spurs, no doubt they crashed out in the Champions League, but the confidence of the team is there. You know, they have players who are all playing on form, who are all in great spirits. You know, I think they would take a couple of days to recover from that defeat, but 3 points against Bournemouth would ease that pain.
Mm. It will be Maurizio Pochettino's 144th Premier League game in charge of Spurs. And Harry Kane has scored 6 goals in his last 4 Premier League games against Bournemouth. He is on a 2-game drought, Bob, and you did criticise him before.
I did. Actually, I don't think that he is quite as good as people make out. Really.
Come on, Bob.
No, I think he's a great player.
He's just a three-season wonder.
No, I mean, he's a top player, yes. But I don't think he's an absolute world beater. I just, you know, people talk about him in the same breath as Messi, Ronaldo. No way. His touch
You can take Messi and Ronaldo out of the picture, but comparing Harry Kane to the best strikers on the planet out there, your Lewandowskis and your Cavanis, don't you think he's right up there? Because I think that there are instances where his final product sometimes can let him down, like we saw against Juventus. But just the sheer strength, the way he holds the ball and brings Son and Dele Alli and Christian Eriksen into the game, the way he drives defenders apart and confuses them at the back, I think he offers a lot more than just goal-scoring prowess. Mm. In fact, there was a really interesting article a couple of days back that was published by T4 Football looking at how Harry Kane could revolutionise himself into becoming a number 10 if he wants to. Mm. Because he has that ability, he has the vision, and more importantly, he has that ability to bring his teammates. And very few strikers in modern football have that these days.
Yeah.
A lot of them like to play off the channel and make the run. But Harry Kane has that ability to just... Part of the reason why Son and Christian Eriksen have been so effective cutting in from the flanks.
Son's had a great season.
Exactly.
So far.
And it's largely due to Harry Kane's presence in the middle. And I think he's one, in terms of being able to do that, he's right up there amongst the best.
Well, working in Eddie Howe and Bournemouth's favour then, Serge Aurier apparently is available for selection after serving a suspension.
Is available for picking up another suspension.
Well, yeah, I'd like to see another 3 foul throws. That'd be so funny. A professional player. we're going for another very short break. When we come back, we're going to start previewing the rest of the EPL weekend for you. Stick with us.
Hi, I'm KJ, Minister of Youth and Sports. Thank Friday, it's football.
Thank Friday, it's football on BFM 89.9.
Thanks for sticking with us. Here with Bob, with Nicholas, and with Keishnan. You can tweet the guys at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp on 018-789-8899. We're found on Facebook. Like our page. It's Football on BFM. Continuing our look at the weekend's fixtures then. Chelsea against Crystal Palace is a London derby. And, there have been painful defeats for Chelsea of late against both Manchester clubs, against Spurs. Palace, well, we spoke about them at the start. 2 last-minute defeats against Spurs and United. I'm not laughing, Palace fans. But, this one's going to be quite tough.
Wilfred Zaha is back in training, remarkably.
We don't know how close he is, whether this game might come a bit too soon, but they need him back, like yesterday.
They need him badly, I think. He's the last 9 games or something that he hasn't played, Palace have not won or absolutely struggled without him. You know, it's just that his attributes of direct running pace and also creativity, bringing Benteke and all the other attackers into play, has been sorely missing in this Crystal Palace side. And I think with Wilfred Zaha there, they will be able to offer Chelsea some sort of threat, because Benteke, for me, is not really capable of functioning all by himself. He thrives on the service from the flanks and also on through balls. So Wilfred Zaha is absolutely pivotal if Palace were to get anything out of this game.
Chelsea have actually lost their last 2 Premier League matches against Crystal Palace. The last side to beat them in 3 consecutive games was Liverpool, and that was back in 2012. Big ask, and Roy Hodgson really needs the points, Bob.
Yeah, he does. But so does Conte, actually, if he's going to get in the top 4.
Do you think he's given up already?
Yeah, I mean, it's looked as if he gave up right at the start of the season, before the start of the season.
With all the transfer hoo-ha.
Yeah. And then there have been two or three times when he's looked like his old self, notably against Barcelona. He really, not only Chelsea, but, you know, the manager, it just looked like last season.
Yeah.
You know, it was a great performance. And, you know, he was there. He was as animated and extrovert as he ever was. And then you get the last game, the abysmal performance against City.
Yeah, I mean,
that was a shocker. Exactly. And he just stood there, didn't he? I mean, you know, you thought he would have been going bonkers, but no, he just took there.
He looks like
Roy Hodgson.
Yeah. You talk about Antonio Conte's teams, and some of the things that hit your head is tough tackling teams that generally battle on the pitch, from your Juve's to Italian national teams to the Chelsea we saw last year. Every single time they faced a big opposition on the field, they battled it out. They did it against Barcelona. I think it's largely due to the romance of the tie. Conte might have looked at it as an audition for a job elsewhere next year.
Yeah, could well be.
But
could
the performance against Man City, there was a point in time when players were just standing. They were not even walking. They were standing, Ross.
Yeah.
And Conte was completely fine with that on the pitch. If that was done by Juve when Conte was there, fans would have turned on him in an instant.
Yep.
I don't understand why he doesn't play Morata or Giroud. Morata maybe has dropped off the pace, but Giroud is there. I think he's just bursting with energy to go and play. But he starts with Hazard up front, and he plays Pedro, who hasn't been really performing.
Well, the false nine didn't work against City. I read something. Hazard said, "I could have played 3 hours and still not touched the ball."
You look at Hazard. He's a player that Hazard at his best is when he has the ball at his feet,
making those runs
with a lot of space to run. But you put him in the middle where he's got his back against the goal.
Mm.
Every single time he receives the ball, there's barely any space for him to move. Obviously, you're bringing Willian into the game and he does well. But I don't understand Pedro on the flanks instead of Hazard.
Yep.
I would rather have Hazard on the flanks and bring in Giroud to hold the ball up.
Chelsea's form player at the moment is Willian. He has 16 goals in his last 17 starts. That's 11 scored and 5 assists. It is still a massive ask for Crystal Palace. Chelsea-Crystal Palace, then, is your late Saturday game. It's 1:30 a.m. Sunday morning. Everton take on Brighton. Now, Chris Hughton is doing great job with Brighton. We were singing his praises on Monday. Let's start with Everton. Let's start with Allardyce. And they're 11th. They need a win more than anything else. In fact, I think the 7 points they picked up in 2018... have all come from home.
Yeah, Big Sam is not working, is it? It worked to begin with in that he sorted them out. At one stage they looked as if they could conceivably go down, but he sorted that out. Then it looked like, okay, everything's fine. Everton rising up the table, nothing to worry about. But then they sort of hit a brick wall, and You really saw the real Sam with his tactics. I mean, with no threat of relegation or anything, he's still as defensive as ever.
Yep.
And Everton fans, although they could probably forgive the initial safety first because relegation was a possible threat, after that, once it subsided, they can't forgive him for this stuff. And bear in mind that about $200 million was spent on players in the summer, and Sam has added to that with another 20-odd million on Tosun, who he hardly ever plays.
Yeah.
The fans are irate, and they really don't want him to stay.
They don't even agree with his substitutions half the time.
No. Yeah. They do seem a bit strange. And Everton fans are an educated lot when it comes to football.
How would you feel if you're Mashiri, you put in all that cash?
You would be pretty angry.
You'd be pretty quiet.
Well, he has talked about getting Arsene Wenger. I mean, he was at Arsenal.
Yeah.
He was a director of Arsenal when, a couple of years ago. And he knows all about Arsene Wenger.
You should get that Marco Silva bloke.
Yeah, but this is really all they were reading about Sam Allardyce right now. This really doesn't bode well for young British managers who want to come up in the game. Because in the last week, there's been a lot of talk about Sam Allardyce's brand of football at Everton. Recent, Rafael van der Vaart did an interview 3 days ago
mm-hmm.
and revealed the kind of tactics Harry Redknapp used to tell him. Apparently, Harry Redknapp during his first days used to say that you just lob the ball to Modric and let Modric find Rafael, and goals will be scored. Yeah,
but Keish, those are old British managers.
Exactly. Yeah, no, yeah, I'm saying that. I'm saying that only people who are able to discern, you know, between that and the new young guys, can see the point. But most regular individuals on the ground are just going to label this as a British thing to do, well, to play old school, boring football. And
all right. Chris Hughton is actually English, but I know he played for the Republic of Ireland.
Well, he's a London boy.
He's a London boy, and he's doing very well with Brighton. I fancy Brighton now. It might be one of the big shouts. It's a Saturday, 11 o'clock kickoff, Everton against Brighton. That's 11th versus 10th. Let's go on to the big one then. Second versus third, Man United against Liverpool. A lot. I've been reading so much about this in the build-up about how Liverpool are a team in form, and rightly so. I mean, their front three are pretty awesome. They're not really Miss Coutinho. Is Jose going to go into this one with a big, shiny red bus?
As Bob wrote on his column yesterday, the Reds have the momentum, but the Red Devils have the bus. you know, and I mean, this is going to be vintage Mourinho, isn't it? He wouldn't want to ruin his momentum, as he says. He wouldn't want to ruin the good run that they've been on, because a defeat here in a derby match as important as this could have a bit of an impact on how they go on
Absolutely.
To play in the next few games.
Jose has come out and said he won't be as negative as he was at Anfield. He can't really, can he?
Well, he can't be. It is at home. But, as I wrote, he has done this before. But I think on this occasion against Liverpool, United fans would forgive him if he got the win that he's after. If somehow,
no matter how,
no matter how, as long as United win, I think that fans will forgive him simply because it's Liverpool. But if it was anybody else, they wouldn't. And I think we have to make a big distinction there.
And it is a different Liverpool side to the one we went to Anfield earlier in the season. That one people couldn't accept because United were the informed team back then. They were banging four past every other team that they faced. Liverpool was still struggling to find their feet. And there was a weight of expectation of United being able to go to Anfield and actually get the victory in a positive manner. This time around, I don't think any United fan can look at both teams and say that United are the better side at the moment. Liverpool have just been phenomenal, especially the front three up front. Oxlade-Chamberlain has looked completely comfortable in their midfield right now as well. So if you're a United fan, all you want right now is just 3 points. It doesn't matter how you get the 3 points, but you won the 3 points. Because this Liverpool side, the context right now for this tie is completely different to the previous one.
Mo Salah, Roberto Firmino and Sadio Mane have scored, 68 goals and 31 assists between them so far this term in all competitions. They are awesome. And all is not well, really, for Manchester United. I'm thinking about the Paul Pogba situation in midfield. That's not really resolved yet. He wasn't that good against Crystal Palace, was he?
No, I think Gary Neville summed it up perfectly when he said
school kids in a playground.
Yeah, and then he said that what Pogba does, it seems as if he's just doing it for Instagram or a YouTube video. I mean, it's not even a cameo. It's a little shimmy and a nice bit of control and maybe a sideways pass, and that's it. You don't see him for another 15 minutes. He doesn't track back. And, I mean, I couldn't help but compare him with James Milner. I mean, boring James Milner. That's on his Twitter feed, I think.
Yeah.
But he's among the leaders for assists in the Champions League, James Milner. And he didn't throw a tantrum when he was asked to play left back, did he?
Nope.
You know, he just gets on with it. And he's not a very exciting player, admittedly, but he's a grafter. And he's becoming more creative this season. I mean, Klopp looked to his other players to make up for the loss of Coutinho. And we were all shaking our heads and thinking, no way. But bit by bit, they've all contributed.
Yeah.
You see Emre Can still putting in a shift, even though he's virtually certain to leave the club at the end of the season. You see Henderson even.
He's improving as well.
Yeah. So they're all rallying round to make up for the loss of Coutinho.
Yeah. All right, going back to United, forgetting Pogba, there is also that Alexis Sanchez problem. He's not exactly bedded in, right? 8 games, you could say nothing from him.
Yeah, and I think he's managed to get away with a lot of the unwanted attention simply because a lot of the highlights have been on the performances of Pogba, you know, and also Lukaku. But this is Sanchez's game to step up. If there was any game which he needs to step up, this would be it, you know. This is his big audition to prove himself in a United jersey, having been the league's highest player, United's highest paid player. Yeah. You know, he's expected to put on a performance. And fans do not want to see just a good pass or a great pass or one great assist. They want to see goals. They want to see him bring in the other attackers like Lukaku, Lingard, Rashford, Pogba, even to a certain extent, into play, you know, and try to create a momentum going forward. Because Sanchez's performance, for me, have simply been laboured this past few games.
Okay, it's the early kickoff on Saturday. Man United second against Liverpool third, Saturday, 8:30 p.m. kickoff. We will be back right after Gary.
Hi, I'm Gary Neville. Thank Friday, it's football.
Thank Friday, it's football. On BFM 89.9.
Back with Bob, Nick and Keish. Big game, don't forget, 8:30 p.m. kickoff. It's the early kickoff, Man United, Liverpool. Bob, you're going to be at some do involving your book as well. I believe it's in Hatama somewhere.
It's at Backyard, a well-known establishment. The event is the Bodog Be a Best Football Pundit contest. A lot of questions about EPL. People can go and test their knowledge of EPL history. And I'll be signing my book there if anyone wants to buy it.
What time did it all start?
Well, it's before kickoff. The quiz, I think, gets underway about 6.
Okay.
Kickoff is 8:30, of course.
Hatamas, Bulldog.
Taman Sri Hatamas, not Bulldog, Backyard.
Backyard. 6 o'clock onwards. That's a good place to watch the big game. Some of the other ties we should mention. Newcastle against Southampton. Newcastle beaten 2-0 by Liverpool last time. They're by no means safe. They're in 16th. They're on 29 points. They could find themselves in the bottom three if they lose against Southampton. Similarly, they're so close. There was 1 point separating this side. So this really is a six-pointer down at the bottom.
It's really frustrating for Rafa because we've praised them so much. We've praised him so much for being able to lift the team. And in January, when he didn't get money, he did the best of what he could and went out to get a few loan signings. And one of the guys that they brought in with really high hopes was Islam Slimani.
Mm.
But he hasn't played much, has he?
He's been injured.
He's just been out. So if you're Rafa Benitez, you're going to look at yourself and say, what kind of bad luck do I really have? I don't have money to sign strikers.
Mitrovic is banging in the goals in the championship. He's on loan, I think, at QP.
Fulham.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, they're on a roll, aren't they? They could go back into the Premier League.
That Sessegnon kid at Fulham's a bit special.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right. Well, that's going to be a massive game, that one. Huddersfield against Swansea. Swansea have lost just one match in their last 13 in all competitions. They've got to be the form team at the bottom.
Yeah, surely. I think if you put them in the top 10 as well, they'll be one of the form teams. You know, you've got players like Jordan Ayew and Ki Sung Hyun who for me has been an absolute revelation since Carlos Carvajal has come on board. There's just been an extra zest to his game, you know. He's outpicking players and also scoring very, very important goals. And you can see the confidence oozing within them, you know, when they recorded a huge win against West Ham last week. So they are odds-on favourite to get this one over a very poor Huddersfield team who haven't won in some time already.
Well, no, actually, recently they've picked it up. 3 wins from their last 5. If they win, they go up to 13th, which they would have bitten your right arm off for if you offered them that at the start of the season. All right, let's talk about West Brom versus Leicester. West Brom, rock bottom at the moment. They've got no momentum going for them.
How Have they not sacked Alan Pardew by now?
I have no idea. What could the guy do? What could a firefighter do now with 8-9 games left? Not a lot with this West Brom side.
At least something compared to what Alan Pardew is doing. Literally every game, week in, week out, they go in with zero expectation of victory because they don't look like a unit. It's not a case of West Brom battling hard on the pitch and being unlucky thus far, coming out of it with 0 points. They've looked messy. They look disjointed on the pitch. There's no desire. It doesn't even seem like they have the ability to win games either. And this weekend, it's not going to be any different. I know this is the Leicester side that I had to deal with a fake retirement rumor over the week.
Mahrez was hacked.
Yeah, it was hacked, apparently. I mean, everyone seems to use that excuse these days. But if you're a West Brom fan and you look at this tie, there's no way you're thinking you're gonna get 3 points out of Leicester, and I'm sitting and wondering, are the owners really going to give Alan Pardew all the way till the end, or are they going to make the call? Because it's still savable. The season can still be rescued to a certain extent. Relegation can still be avoided mathematically.
Yeah, mathematically. I mean, if they win against Leicester, that would be a start.
Yeah, I think they should get Sam Allardyce.
Hey.
It certainly would test.
I think
they
should get Tony Pulis. Doesn't he save teams in this situation?
Oh dear, yeah. It is just about savable, but only just. And I think if they lose to Leicester, it's just about goodbye.
Well,
isn't
the
it?
Big plus for West Brom going into this weekend is Leicester are in quite bad form themselves. They haven't won in five, so if the Baggies can pull it off, I know it's a big if. Two letters, massive word.
Well, it's a sort of Midlands derby as well, isn't it?
Yeah. And if you can't pull yourself up for that one.
Yeah, but I think it's last chance saloon for Alan Pardew. And I think the owners are probably already budgeting for next season being a championship club and thinking of who they're going to get rid of and who's on big money and that sort of thing.
Yeah, good point. All right, West Ham versus Burnley. West Ham are really slipping towards danger. I know David Moyes did really well. They got a few results, but 4-1 defeat. Two 4-1 thrashings, in fact, in their last two games. Now they're at home to Burnley. Burnley should just be called Burnley 7th. Isn't that their full name? Burnley 7th FC.
Soon 6th, though, if Arsenal keep dropping the ball.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good point. West Ham need a performance and a result. Their fans demand it.
I think this is another manager who is already also hinging on exiting the door. Just looking at the West Ham performances, I think when Moyes was on board earlier in the season, he sort of stabilized them, you know, got them in mid-table. But the rails have just come off in recent games, you know, and it's quite baffling to see, especially with the players at their disposal. You know, Lanzini is back. You got Arnautović playing really, really well. You know, Chicharito chips in with an odd goal here and there. But then again, they don't seem to be able to convert those individual performances into 3 points. And I think he's also sort of lost the belief of his players because they really seem very limp in the last two games. And they're facing a Burnley side who is the total opposite. You know, they're full of energy. They're full of running. They only need one chance to score, like how they did against Everton last week. So, really, West Ham would have to be at the top of their game if they were to get anything from this.
All right, 11 o'clock kickoff, West Ham against Burnley. That's the weekend. Here's producer Andy Whitelaw with the treatment table.
In our fantasy league, it's a big congratulations to Sukwin Gill, who's Chrome Dome FC atop of the table with 1,785 points. Tan Chun Hyung's Red Ring a second. Poi Ho Kok's Jurgen Kopp sit third. Fourth spot belongs to David Koo's DPK. And completing the top five is Charnaquet's W309C. So as you get ready to sort out your team for the weekend, here's an injury update from the treatment table. Anthony Martial is carrying a knock for Manchester United and is a doubt for their big clash with Liverpool. Andrew Robertson and Jordan Henderson are minor worries for Jurgen Klopp's side, but both should be okay. Phil Jagielka is a doubt for Everton, with Ramiro Funes Mori potentially making his first start of the season for the Toffees. Brighton are 50-50 over Yuri Skalic. Gareth Barry could miss out for West Brom against Leicester. The Foxes could be at full strength, apart from Daniel Amati. Islam Soleimani is still out for Newcastle. Southampton are at full strength, apart from Charlie Austin, Maya Yoshida and Stephen Davis. Aaron Moy and Alex Pritchard are touch and go at Huddersfield. Swansea will give a late fitness test to Leon Britton. Angelo Ogbonna is battling illness for West Ham but should be okay, while James Collins is 50-50 with a thigh strain. Burnley's Scott Arfield is absent with a calf strain. N'Golo Kanté could be back for Chelsea following illness. Johan Kabay, Wilfried Zaha and Joel Ward will have late fitness tests for Crystal Palace. Fullbacks Nacho Monreal and Hector Bellerin look like they're still missing for Arsenal against Watford. The Hornets could have as many as 11 out injured, with Kiko Femenia the most likely to be involved. Mark Pugh and Jordan Ibe are sidelined for Bournemouth. Tottenham are fully fit apart from Toby Alderweireld. Stoke City have a full complement apart from Stephen Ireland, Mame Diouf and Lee Grant. Fernandinho and Raheem Sterling are minor doubts for Manchester City, but both should be fine. So that about wraps it up for this round. Have a great weekend and stay healthy.
Producer Andy Whitelaw there with the treatment table. That is that. Let's get a prediction or two.
It's time for the big weekend shout brought to you by MyChris.
Right, Bob, let's start with Sir Bob. What's your big shout, Bob?
I'm going for the big game. I'm going for Liverpool. I think it's time they asserted their superiority over Manchester United. I think this will be the occasion to do it. Mane and Salah will be playing. They weren't together in the first game when Mourinho parked the bus. Mane was unavailable, so United managed to snuff out Salah. But I think when the two of them are there, and Liverpool have come on a lot since then, I think United will have trouble in stopping them.
A perch-climbing win predicted by Bob. What's your big shout then, Nick?
I'm going for Palace to get something from Chelsea. Even though they lost against United, they put on a really spirited display. And if they got Zaha back, I think he and Benteke can cause this Chelsea team a lot of problems. And Roy Hodgson is the manager who usually gets the job done in the business end of the season. So I think he will be looking at this as a match to get something out of.
I think if that happens, Conte might just sit in his chair and implode. What's your big shout, Keish?
I'm going for the MSL big shout this
week.
There's a huge fixture in the East Coast. League leaders JDT are travelling to face the only unbeaten team in the league so far, Terengganu, who are only 1 point behind JDT. But I think Terengganu have looked really, really solid this year. The partnership of Kipre, Cheche and Lee Tuck up front has been getting them goals, has been looking really positive. And I think they have enough to get to nick it over JDT and overtake them in the league standings this weekend.
I'm with you on that.
The Big Weekend Shout is brought to you by MyChris, connecting people and business with a personal touch.
Sticking with the MSL theme, PKNS take on Kelantan, kicking off right now, and you should go. It's live on iFlix, it's on Hip TV. I'll be there at the Shah Alam Stadium. Bye, have a great weekend.
Thank Friday. It's football every Friday at 8 p.m. on BFM 89.9. Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.